Okay, let's try it anyway. And if my old bones wear out, I'll just ask you to help me to get through it anyway. As I said, my name is Mary R. from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm a member of the Park Side and the 4021 Al-Anon group in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've been a member of Al-Anon for, I was asking Muriel, could she help me with that? And I think it's close to 70 years. I've been an active member, not just a member. I've been an active member in Al-Anon ever since I came in quite a few years ago. My husband, being an AA member and very active in AA. In fact, he was one of the first, he was the first delegate, black delegate from the state of Pennsylvania to serve at the world's, at the General Service Office. And we're all proud of that. I tell you, I don't really know how to get started with my story. I definitely hope I'm able to end with it, but I have a long journey and a very interested one in the fellowship. I'll try to lean back. I came into Al-Anon in 1958 or 59. I wasn't looking for any help. As we say, we give in Al-Anon or share in Al-Anon. I was looking for a way to get my husband to pay attention to what I was saying to him and realize that I would tell him what to do and how to act since I was in Al-Anon and he was in AA. And I certainly knew more about what needed to be, what he needed to do or say than he did. Very proud, we both enjoyed. In fact, there were no Al-Anon groups for blacks in my area when I came in. And I went to the AA meetings with my husband most of the time. And as he grew and he became the first black delegate to the General Service Office in 1969. And that really inspired me to become more active in Al-Anon. I went to the to AA with him. Not Al-Anon. I went to the convention, AA conventions, with him when he served, as I said, as the first black delegate from the state of Pennsylvania, Eastern Pennsylvania. I'm not prepared this morning. Now, they say this is a very truthful fellowship. And I really, I don't have anything particular prepared. And I noticed the speaker before Bessie, she really went right along her story and told her family story and her own story. But I will tell you part of my experience and share some of my strength that I've gotten from this fellowship and the hope that you have given me and still giving me as I walk my, I consider last journey in this fellowship today. Al-Anon has been, along with AA and Al-Teen, the strength that I have leaned on through you, through my family, and those of you I have not met yet. You have all reached out your hands to me as I have traveled this journey in Al-Anon. and in Elgin. I want to thank you for your strength. When I got weak, when I say weak, it may not have been physically weak, but the most important part that I have gotten from this fellowship and AA and Elgin is spiritual strength. I did not have, I was very lacking of spiritual strength when I came into this program. Because I had sort of laid God aside. I figured God had not answered my prayers because he didn't do what I told him to do. And thank God for that. That he was still the ruler of the world. And I was to follow the direction you give me, God's direction through you. And that was the most difficult thing for me to do. I never felt that anybody that I had met knew more about anything than I did. And that was trouble right there. Because when I really stayed around and paid attention to you, I had a rude awakening that I knew very little. But I wouldn't let you know that. I really wanted you to think that whatever it was, if I had never heard of it before, that I knew more about it than you did. After being in Al-Anon for a while, they gave me a name for that particular behavior. They called it insecurity and lack of spirituality. I was raised in very spiritual home, where we had a lot of religion, but we didn't have much spirituality. And that's I found in this fellowship from you, because you taught me how to do one of the things that I have found very important in this life and in this way of living, and that is to forgive. See, all those that stuff that my husband, I considered he did when he was drinking, I figured he was doing that to me. And he was going to pay for that when he got sober. And anything that he did that I didn't like, I would hold all those things up to him like a mirror and say, yeah, you know, when you remember when you did such and such a thing. Maybe he didn't know anything about it, but I did. I found that, in fact, let me say, in my area where I live, so far as Al-Anon was concerned, there were no Al-Anon groups available for Black people. We had one group that was a long way from us. They call it the Northeast. And they would invite us, and we would do what we go to those meetings sometime. But until 1958, that's a lot. 1958, I attended my first Al-Anon meeting. And there was that same group that was so far away, which was all white. They were like a ship that eased under us and helped us to establish in my community the first Al-Anon group in the community for us to go. And that group is one of the strongest right now in the state of Pennsylvania. And that's called Parkside. That's my home group. And my second group is can't think of the name of the second group. But I am a member of two Al-Anon groups in this state. Since the weather and the conditions of the viruses and so on, we haven't been able to meet collectively for quite a long time. But we do stay in touch by the phone. I have found for me, Al-Anon has been the strength that has gotten me this far in life and this long. I really believe it's contributed to my spiritual growth in this fellowship. It helped me to be able to rear my family, my children. It helped me to accept, and that word has always been a very important one to me, accept. I'm sure some of my re-addict kind of wild behavior in my growing up and in my marriage, because I did not want to accept many things that I had to. I wanted to do what was the impossible, and that's change. I wanted to change my husband. When he was living, I wanted to make him stop drinking, and if you didn't do such and such a thing, this was going to be the consequence. I didn't have any consequence for anything, but I want him to believe that, and I wanted to create the fear in him that I would do it. Well, with no spiritual help, if I could have, I would have. But the thing, God has blessed me, I didn't have that kind of spiritual help. God has blessed me to at least get into a program, Al-Anon. Get into the program of Al-Anon, which was going to meetings and listening to other people, criticizing other people, saying that that wouldn't happen to me. That has caused me one of the greatest blessings, and that is changed my attitude. Had nothing to do with what other people was doing. It was, how can I change the part that I played in whatever was going on? And I was good at telling in Al-Anon meetings what somebody else did, and say, raise my hand very politely when you finish your tirade about he did this and he did that and she did that. And I never mentioned me. And people would always go, well, Mary, what part did you play in it? And that became very difficult for me to say, well, if I couldn't think of a reason for doing it, I would say because they did something, it's always the other person. And you know, that is, after all these years in my spiritual journey, I will have a tendency now to blame other people for what I have done and or what I have said, and try to make you look bad about it, not me. It was ever not me. I was the youngest in my family growing up, two other sisters older than I, and everybody called me the baby. And I really wanted to behave like a baby at 25 and 30 years old. Well, you know, at that age, if you're still acting like a baby, you become a problem. I became a problem in the family because the only thing I knew to do was to say what you did. And I never thought about marriage. I'm going to be jumping here a lot. And when I met my husband, that was something was about him that I knew I had to change. I was coming from class one afternoon, and he caught up with me and started talking some kind of irrational behavior. I didn't know. I know it was strange. I knew nothing about him drinking. Now, when one of my relatives, we had a lot of bad habits in the family, but drinking wasn't one. Nobody in my parents' home drank and lived in our house. So therefore, smelling that particular odor on him when he would catch up with me coming from school and trying to walk me home and talk a lot of crazy talk that I thought was crazy. He was in the service. And I really fascinated with this man, because I, not that I loved him, I want to change him. That thing that Al-Anon has helped me so much with now. I wanted to make, I said, what is wrong with him? He's talking all this wild, crazy talk. And he told me something that I know he is crazy. He told me, he said, you know, I love you, but you're not pretty, but I still love you. And I, how has he got into service? I know this man is crazy. And why are they keeping him here? And that became a project of mine, trying to figure out how this crazy man got into service and stayed. Well, working on other people long before I came into Al-Anon or attended AA meetings with my husband was always a problem with me. My eyes was always focused on the other person, not me. So he was a good project for me. How did he get in the service? And he was a complete nut. And I was intending to find out and see why they didn't do something about this man's mental illness. And he walking around with firearms on. So that's how that big problem, I mean that, trying to change other people, investigation, that's the word I'm looking for, of my husband became my husband, because I found out he was very interesting person, very intelligent person. And somehow that just melted into a love affair that ended into marriage and four beautiful children, which grew up to be grandparents and parents of their own, and I'm proud of all of them. I started out by telling you, I'm not prepared for sharing this morning. I've been told many times, tell the truth. Tell the truth, Mary. And I said when I got up, you're not prepared. And to share your story this morning like you would like to do. But let me get to why I have the right, let me say, to sit here. My husband and I dated for a while, and I found this strange feeling that I really had fallen in love with this man, and we got married. And I had one purpose. It wasn't love. I was going to change him, because he had a habit that I didn't like. And if he wanted me, the pride of everything, you're going to have to change. I don't have to change. You're going to have to change. And that is, you're going to stop drinking. You're not going to be drinking unless I say you can drink. That's the way I really felt. Anything I didn't like, it had to change. If it wanted to be a part of my life. And that's when I met my biggest problem, trying to change the unchangeable. And not even thinking about trying to incorporate God's will in this soul situation. A guy could wait till I finished, and then he could polish him up with whatever he had to offer after I got this man straightened out. Now, you know what a mess I was by the time I got drugged through the mud of alcoholism. Not alcohol, the isms, the anger, the anything you name that is negative. That's what I felt. The insecurity that I'm failing at the main thing I married the man for, changing him. He doesn't love me. That's why he's doing this. He's doing it to hurt me, and so on and so on. It gave me a very miserable beginning life. I never thought too much of myself anyway. And I never thought that if you don't love a person, if you love the person, you have to let them control you. They would tell you what to do and what not to do. And if you did do that, that showed love for that person. In other words, let them run your life and theirs if they could. My husband became an AA member in 1969, I think. He was the first black delegate to the General Service Office the early 70s. That's where it was a blessed to meet Bill and Lois. I can remember when my husband was elected delegate for the state of Pennsylvania. And we went to New York for the first conference, yes. I get conference and convention mixed up. And when we arrived that Sunday afternoon, I had never seen that many AA people coming together, thousands, just walking around, getting ready for the meeting. And I'm looking at all these people. My goodness, we were the only blacks there. But just the idea, that many people in AA, I'd never seen that here in the state. And so they were looking at us very strangely, because I don't think they had another black couple there. But so we were the only one there that Sunday afternoon. And as we moved around, because my husband was doing what the rest of the people did, walked around and shaking hands with all the delegates and people that and their families that was there, wives and so on. We were standing in the hallway, and this tall man walked up behind us and put his arms around us, and I just kind of glanced up at the hand on my shoulder. And he said quietly to my husband, "You must be Lou." My husband's name was Lewis. Everybody called him Lou. And Bill said to him, "You must be Lou. And I'm glad you're here." And walked away. And I kind of glanced at the way he went, but I never saw his face. And it dawned upon me as he left and greeted us with that very casual, "You must be Lou." And my husband was the first black delegate to the General Service Office. And Bill greeted him in that way. "No big deal. You're an AA member. And you're serving. And it ain't no big deal, but it is a big thing." I didn't pay that any attention because it didn't apply to me. I had about 3 or 4 years in Al-Anon. So it didn't pertain to Al-Anon. So I was acting like guests. And I went with my husband wherever he went, and I shook hands with people, but I didn't feel a part of, and neither should I. So when Bill left us, and my husband, I thought he was just going to have a stroke, because he knew who Bill was. I didn't, and frankly, didn't care. I wasn't there to meet Bill Wilson, although I had heard about him in the groups around here in the city. Whenever Bill would come to the city of Philadelphia and visit the groups, oh, you'd hear those people, Bill Wilson was here. Bill Wilson was here. I said, so what? Bill Wilson was here. Who is Bill Wilson? Hadn't heard of Lois. We go to AA meetings, and sometimes you hear Lois's name mentioned. Lois didn't come to the AA meeting. Come to the meetings in New York when they would have the Mary's going to help me along out of this. But anyway, it didn't impress me when he shook our hand and said to Lewis, I'm glad you're here, and walked away. So we started moving around and shaking hands. My husband was a lovable, personable person that everybody liked, and he got along with everybody. So there was no Al-Anon meetings because this was the AA convention. And so the evening went on, and Lois was not coming into the city of New York, because they don't live or didn't live in the city. They lived outside of the city in White Plains. And you had to take a bus, and which we did later on, to get to Lois and Bill's place. But after a while, it dawned upon me, that's the man that started this AA thing. Oh, that's wonderful. It takes a long time. I'm a slow learner. I didn't say I was. I'm telling you, I didn't wait to get old to be a slow learner. I grew up being a slow learner. And so that was one of those times I said, oh, that's Bill Wilson. I got felt a little good about that. My husband was so excited about being first delegate from the state of Pennsylvania, this part of the southern Pennsylvania here in Pennsylvania. So I walked with him and, you know, and met the people, and they went to their meetings, and we didn't have any Al-Anon meetings going on at that time. So I didn't have a meeting to go to, so I went to a movie, and I went back to the hotel. That felt good, but I didn't feel a part of. That was what, we didn't have our convention going on here in Pennsylvania at that time. So I didn't feel a part of what Lewis was feeling, because I thought he was going to jump out of his skin. He was so excited about attending the meeting. So I got through that first conference. Mm-hmm. Why I get convention and conference so mixed up here? Well, that's not important. I have served in many capacities and enjoyed every one of them that you have allowed me. You prepared me to serve in this fellowship. When they said put up the chairs, I got up and put up the chair. always enjoyed everything I was doing because we did it collectively. No one person had to do anything. Always had help. It's not because you the person put up the chairs, so you the chairperson. You said, come on and help. And you did. And so therefore, I felt pretty good about being a part of Al-Anon when I came back from the being with my husband in New York. And I went back and was telling them, and then the next year, I think, we started having our own Muriel.
Your conventions?
Yeah. So Muriel's interpreting, I don't know why I keep calling that, I want to call that a convention, but it wasn't a convention. Anyway, let me tell you something about me functioning. Whatever you asked me to do, that is the one thing I brought to this fellowship over 60 some years ago. That's willingness and enjoying what I was doing. It's the first time you taught me a lesson that is, don't ask so many questions. Just go ahead and do it. They call that surrender. You know, if you got to give me the whole blue plate of what you want me to do, I ain't getting much from it spiritually. If you say, bring those chairs out of the back and set them in front here, first I'm on the wall, I got to bring them. Well, if you have to tell me the whole story of why I had to bring the chairs, I didn't get anything out of it spiritually. I didn't surrender to saying, well, Sally said bring them, so I'm going to take them. Well, why did she? I don't know. I don't have to know everything today. That's what I'm really telling you. I consider if I can trust Sally, Sailor, or Jim, or John, if you say do something and I can do it, you have paved the way to my higher power, which I call God. Because if I can't trust you, forget it. I am not going to trust God either. So he put us here to interact for me with each other. So when they told me to be chairperson, I was the first black chairperson in our Pennsylvania area. I served as, it's the only thing I didn't serve was a delegate. And that's when I was using self-will, because when it came my time to stand for delegate, and I was on the state committee, some other people said to me, and I loved what they said, said, now, Mayor, you know if you stand, you're going to draw a lot of votes from the person we're playing politics, let's just face it. Yes, we had some politics in our part of the state. I think we don't leave our politics outside of the fellowship. We bring part of it in. You know, you're going to vote for so-and-so. Are you going willing to stand for such and such? Yes, we did that. And I thought it was very, in fact, I still think to a point, it's necessary. But anyway, they said to me, Mary, you know, although you're active, you're doing a good job as state chairperson and a few other things you have served as, you're always willing to move when you're asked you to. And one thing, you are good at surrendering. You don't want to do everything yourself. You allow other people a chance to do some things also. And so they said, but you know, with the situation In our area, being what it is, you're not going to be elected. You might stand for delegate, but you're not going to be elected. You know that. So I resigned. I didn't stand. I should have, you see, then we're playing politics. I didn't let God in there. All those situations could have been whatever it was, what we were doing, playing politics. If it was God's will for me to be elected, if I had been able to put the whole situation in God's stand and stand because it was my right and I had the experience that you had given me through the last 3 to 6 years I had served in different capacities on the committee, I would have been able to get up and say, well, if they elect me, but it is my privilege and my duty to stand and say, here I am, I'm willing. That taught me a lesson about the difference in being willing and playing politics. So I didn't stand for delegate. And everybody from my area, they were very disgusted with me because they were all ready to vote for me, which is Paul. We had Mary, we got you, got you. You go ahead. Yes. So what, okay. So I didn't stand for delegate. I don't regret that. I served as state chairperson. I've served as secretary, I've served many other state officers. I'll do anything you tell me to do. And I never want the name to get in there. I want my spiritual side to say, well, I'm willing. Who's going to help me? This program has taught me how to live and let live. This program has taught me to be grateful for what I have, not what I ought to have. It has taught me how to appreciate people that just necessarily appreciate me. I learned so much from the spiritual side of living. As I said, meeting Bill and Lois was one of the most exciting, not big time. Guess who I know? I know Lois. I know Bill. I don't know the people. I met them. And I'm grateful they put a spiritual block in my life that I definitely would not have had if I had not met them and went to their home and walked through that house and could feel their presence even after they were gone. It has prepared me now for being ready to pass on to you what you passed on to me. So I'm so grateful to be here this morning. I'm so grateful that you asked me and accepted me as I am. I am almost 100 years old, and I'm proud of that. And I thank you for all the contributions you have given me on this spiritual journey. Thank you for letting me share.